Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast. Gary Truss, Billboard Senior Director of Charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard.
And we're picking up from last time. This is part two here, two-part podcast. We're recording this in New York City at Gray Noise Studios with some really special musical guests who have stepped away for a bit from Taylor Parks' Burnout gathering of songwriters taking place in Brooklyn as we're recording this. So thanks so much, Taylor, and everybody for doing this.
Thanks for having us.
Of course. So we'll go around the room like we did last time. Dave and Yael Penn from Hitsongs Deconstructed are back. Hitsongs Deconstructed tracks the compositional characteristics of top 10 Hot 100 hits, analyzes songwriting, production techniques behind them. Welcome back, Dave and Yael.
Thank you, Gary. Great to be back.
So, yeah, we had so much fun on the first part, talking sort of specifically about wellness and you guys are creative and how you can actually be creative and not burn out, since that's the key word here. In this part, a little bit more about the actual work that you guys do when you're in the studio, when your minds are cranking, when the songs are actually getting written and produced. And that's where Dave and Yael are really going to put their expertise to. Well, introduce yourselves up first. First, you guys here with us, and then we'll go to the phone.
Mm-hmm. Tommy Brown, facilitator of the function. Back at it again.
Leon Thomas, consider myself an entertainer, you know, producer, songwriter, artist, actor.
I am Taylor Parks. I'm a creator, like, whether it's, you know, from the style that I do, or the studio, or, you know, or creating camps, or music.
Hi, I'm Sarah Hudson. I'm songwriter, artist, and like I said before, I like to call myself a muse for other people, to bring light to other people as well.
All right, so you guys are really familiar with being on the Billboard Hot 100. I hope it's okay at the moment that there's somebody who's number one, who's on the phone, and it's Jesse St. John, co-writer of Lizzo's Truth Hurts. So congratulations, Jesse, first of all, on being number one as we're talking right now with Truth Hurts.
Yay!
Yay! I'm not sensing any jealousy. You guys are happy, right?
No. When good things happen to amazing people, it just, you can only be happy for them.
Amen.
Completely. Yeah.
Jesse, what does it feel like right now to be number one with this song?
The best part has been just genuinely feeling the support from my community of not only writers but also LGBTQ talent. It feels really good because you always pray and manifest for a massive hit, but you know, it feels even better to feel like people are genuinely happy for you. The amount of inpouring from artists and writers and producers that I've been working with for the past few years is like, damn, I knew it was a matter of time. So it just feels really good. I'm happy.
That's kind of what you said to Taylor and everybody in the first part, how it's not always so much about, yeah, this song is so successful, but just that family of community and the people who created it. that you guys can all share this together. It seems like that really is something that's so special to all of you guys.
I always say
all of my success isn't just for me. Mm-hmm. Any success that I get is for all of us who are taking a chance and going to studios every day and sharing your little thought part of your day to try to make something that hopefully people will hear and want to share and just react to.
It's so intimate and personal what we do, and you know, I know for me, I've made some of my lifelong best friends in this industry. Jesse is my best friend, and we talk every single day, and you know, Taylor I've known for years now, and you just really bond with people on a whole other level. And then so when they have success, it feels like success to you too, because you're like, oh, that's like my girl,
and she's been doing
this for so long and putting her heart into it, or his heart into it, and it just feels so cool to see when you are genuinely like happy for the someone in the community. Mm-hmm. You know,
and is this one a little bit extra special, Jesse, in the sense that yeah, a lot of people may have not so much written off the song, but never knew about it because it took 2 years, really, for this song to get to number one.
Well, I was willing to wait 3 more years. No, I'm just kidding. I just feel like it's kind of a like win for all of us, because how many times we put out songs and we're like, this is such a hit, but no one heard it. Mm-hmm. It's like we all have those songs that are like, it's a hit, but like it's just living in a laptop. So I mean, it gives hope, and it's actually part of like a long lineage of songs that did take their time to find their audience, and it all kind of boils down to great song, great artist, and just perfect timing.
The song's meant to be a hit; it'll find its audience at some point.
So
right?
True, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're going to get into in this part of it. The idea of writing a great song, but also writing a great song that you really want to be a hit. And is there some magic formula? Is there anything that can be taught? Is there anything you can really say? Because you guys, you're all over the charts. If anyone can dispense any advice on how that's done, you guys are the ones to talk to. And Dave and Yael, you analyze Hot 100 hits deeper than anyone I know. So what better combination here to put you guys all together?
Cool.
Great. So, on the topic of the unique skill set that goes into writing a hit, you're expected to take your distinct creativity and shape it into a song that's going to connect with the artist that you're writing for, and then also connect with the audience that's receiving it, and also make money. When did you all realize that you wanted to be hit songwriters, and did it change the way that you approach your songwriting in order to write hit after hit? And on that topic, now when you write a song, do you already approach it with the intent of it being a hit?
That's a very interesting question. I think we'll start backwards. Like, I think when you start to write more and more and more and you have success doing it, like that excitement of it, like winning and like all of being it, if it going number one or the top five or whatever, that's the thing that can be a little bit addicting, right? Like, mm-hmm. So you can go into the studio not making music from the place where you got your first hit in the first place.
Yeah, I feel like we can break down a song to an extent and like break down the math and all of it, but at the end of the day, it's like, with Truth Hurts, for example, it's a real song coming from a real place, from a real woman expressing herself, and that just connects.
Yes.
People just connect to authenticity, and I think when you're in the room making it, and it's authentic, and it feels good in the room, it's going to connect to somebody, you know?
Yes.
And I think a lot of it is feeling. Of course, you have to know how to write, you know, catchy hooks and structure.
Right.
Yeah, but I don't know. A lot of it is feeling, in my opinion.
I
also think that we're pop music fans. So for us to go in and make something that you want to live, like, you know, you get the demo that day and you want to keep listening to it over and over, and it feels really good, that's usually a good sign of, okay, if this is connecting with me and I play it for my friends and they all want it to come out and they're excited, that's usually a pretty good indicator. Pop music is just super popular,
yeah.
Which is why, you know, Lil Tecca and Ariana and Baby Shark and Maroon 5 all kind of live together.
Yeah, lots of people
know it.
Yeah.
At times, when you're writing a song, and let's say you come up with a part that is, you love it, it's awesome, but it doesn't really serve the song, how do you make sure that your attachment to what you're writing doesn't get in the way of judging what really works for the song?
I think that that's the, well, you have to know when to take that risk, like what we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. And that comes with becoming a seasoned writer and knowing structure and understanding. Now, there is a bit of a science to song. We understand that you repetition is good. We understand the things that the human brain is easier to understand. What words sound better? Mm. We've you know, talked about, oh, is it the or is it in?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it this word or is it that word that just sings better and sounds better to the ear? So it is a bit of a psychological game as well, and that's something that you learn with collaboration, like with other people, and you learn it over time, because that's the skill that goes into being able to consistently make popular songs or hit songs, you know?
And I think there's such an art form to collaboration. And I think one of the biggest things for me is walking into the room and having no ego. Like, we are there. This producer said to me a long time ago when I first started, they were like, whatever the song wants, let's do whatever the song wants. It's like, we are there to make the best song and do what's best for the song. So if I write a pre and I'm like, I fucking love this pre, and everyone else doesn't, I'm not going to like fight for my pre. I'm going to say, okay, let's move on. What else is there? You know, like, removing that ego is just everything, in my opinion, and listening to your collaborators. And I don't know, the worst thing is when you're in a room and someone's like, has that ego and that guard, you know?
Yes.
So how do you balance the egos in the room? Because obviously, you know, I guess the more seasoned you are, maybe, or what your mentality is, you can leave that ego at the door, check it at the door. But you're going to run into people that have egos or have certain ways, like, I want it done a certain way. How do you deal with that? And if you're in a situation that's not working too well, how do you deal with that?
Well, I mean, I can say collaborating with other producers, you know, it can be kind of tough sometimes, especially when you have your own perspective on, like, just how to get to that sweet spot, you know, just something that's really giving you a feel. And some people, you know, I've seen in Fruity Loops can make a beat in like 20 minutes because they got the loop that they love, and, you know, they're building those drums, and there you go, it's cooked, it's ready. But there's other kind of, you know, records that require a little bit more heavy lifting, and sometimes that's genuinely, you know, the melodic side to it, maybe finding that, you know, pre-chorus melody that kind of takes us away from that, you know, verse vibe. And, you know, I think when you're in the room, it's just always good to just keep an open mind and just understand that, you know, some people create faster than others. It's not about, like, you know, rushing your shit to make it feel like, yeah, look, it's some guys, like, let's be real, like, it takes me some time to get to something great, but I'll be real, it happens, you know. So
so when you're doing this and a couple of you say, I want to go in this direction, it's really cool,
right?
Then somebody else says, nah, let's go in this direction, it's really cool. They're both really cool. They both sound great. Yeah. What do you do? Because you could wind up with two completely different songs that do have hit potential.
I think with me, my thing is, like, I try never to shoot down an idea because you may find gold in with the ideas.
Yeah, sure.
Like, for an example, when we were doing, let's say, Thank You Next, the song was done. It was like, the song's incredible. It was like, maybe we should try a different version. And it was like, okay, well, let's just try a different version. But the first one's the hit, but let's try it if we try two or three.
Yeah.
Which is literally what we did.
Yeah, what we want to do, we can mute it and go back to the original. So I try not to shoot down any ideas and keep aware, because everybody is great at something. So I try to pull what's great from who I'm around. Because if his melodies are crazy or his chords, like, I'm going to look to him for that. I'm not going to come and be like, no, let me play these chords. Mm-hmm. Or let me write it. If she writes crazy.
So you play with strengths, right?
Yeah,
right.
That's what I think it is.
That's the whole part of, like, managing and balancing the egos.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
at some point, you know, you just kind of got to let, you know, Kobe shoot the ball if that's what he's doing. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, do your thing. If that's your thing, like, do it and be great at it and just kind of, like, you know, swallow your pride a little bit and just keep
yeah.
pushing.
Because
it's always what's best for the song. She said it right. You know, that's dope.
I would hate to have a band with three drummers.
Yes.
It's also huge when you're with a group of writers and it's like, you have to know why you're there and you have to know, you know, feel confident enough to be like, okay, I'm here for a reason because they want my ring. And they're here for a reason because I want what they have. So I think it's just kind of like, you know, Sarah said, like, no ego. I kind of like come from the perspective of like the song is kind of already written and you just have to figure out how to make it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like...
That's awesome. And is there ever a point where you take a step back, just really evaluate the song and see if it's got hit potential or the potential to be, you know, the song you want it to be?
For me, it's like, and we were talking about it earlier, the inner child. Like, I want to get in there and vomit everything. Bad ideas, good ideas, weird ideas. See what you want to do. Dance around, like, be freaky, you know? And then get it all out. And then later, this is just my preference. I like to go back later and go, oh, this could be better. That could be better.
Yeah.
Let's make it be better. Let's write a new hook. Let's whatever. But I think it's just important at first to just, like, go in and get creative. Like, even us the first day here, we immediately were like, what? You know? We just, like, got something out of our system.
Totally.
And I don't know. I think that, like, sets up the energy in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for us, thinking about, like, oh, how do we write a hit today? It's like, that's just going to make it probably the worst song ever.
Well, I think that's a commonality with all of you.
Yeah.
It's real and it's authentic.
Yeah.
And I think that comes across in every single one of your songs because there's a vibe that you cannot quantify, that it gets into your soul and you feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously.
Yes.
And I think that is one of the things that really helps launch songs to the top of the charts. It's that authentic nature.
Mm-hmm.
Because great craft and everything, that can be learned.
Mm-hmm.
But that true soul of
completely
what comes through
right.
is what puts it over the top.
How do you go about keeping it real with the artist that you're writing for?
And in the constructs of what is, let's face it, a hit song structure. I mean, as you were saying, there are certain mathematical things and there's certain structures and there's certain techniques that all hit songs employ that the audience is being, they're familiar with it, they're expecting it, but also creating something new, fresh, different, and really pushing the boundaries.
The really, really important thing, and for me as a writer who really goes in, like whether it's Chanel or Christina and doing like, or Ariana with Tommy, like doing at least 3 or 4 or 5 songs on each of these projects, you really have to, you develop this relationship. The other side of songwriting is the personality and the way that you work with people. The other side, so if there's an artist and I understand that, I know what the people want, I know what they want, what is the best way to get this point across? You're going to have to do that in any type of job in life. Like, you're going to have to do that. So you really have the other side of songwriting after being, because we know a lot of songwriters who might be even technically good, but are just, you don't have the other side. So maybe you get somebody else to do the other side. Maybe you're a duo, or maybe you have a manager who's the other side. Whatever it is, how do you get your point across? Because that's what's going to really be the success to you as a producer when he comes in and he's saying he's taking that Quincy, you know, effect. How do you get the best out of that person? Like, how do you get, as a vocal producer, how do I get the best out of the person? How do you get the best out of yourself?
Well, I think you're wearing a couple different hats. You know, you're going to be a therapist at one point.
You're
going to be a fan at one point. You're going to be an architect building their next whatever, you know? And it's like really tough at first to kind of play therapist because you're human and you're probably thinking like, what? No, like, no, what are you talking about?
You can't judge.
So at that point, it's really important to then be that muse and help build that next situation. But just wearing those different hats is very tough as a songwriter. And I definitely commend everybody that's, you know, going out there every day and really handling all these different artists and egos and hurt feelings of them even being detached from their fans or the people that they're servicing to, mm-hmm. and you having to tell them, like, yo, people really think,
if anybody's gonna tell you, it's me.
Right.
Like, it has to
I think be. You should charge more by the hour for you.
That's hilarious.
I love it. Love what you taught me, and for that I say thank you. Thank you.
So, Taylor, for example. So you have a song like Thank You Next, where, I mean, this is putting that extra something into a hit song. And I think that's what a lot of hit songs have in common, is that it has that extra something, that extra unique hook, that extra, you know, that puts it over the top. So the chorus, three-time repetition of the super infectious melody, Thank You Next, Next. Mm-hmm. But then you conclude with I'm So Fucking Grateful For My Ex. Mm-hmm. Took the section and the song mm-hmm. way to the next level. So how did that come about, and do you look for these moments to include in the songs to really help take them to the next level?
Oh, definitely. As a top liner, for Ariana as an artist, I think you're always looking for ways to say, how can we take this concept to the furthest level so we can really make sure that they get it? And we can really make sure that they get what this is about, mm-hmm. you know? And so, Thank You Next is a very simple phrase, and, mm-hmm. you know, so it's like, okay, yeah, and it's a very catchy thing. It's something that Ariana says naturally, and we know that, and most of the times too, I think in the hook, most of the times you are going to start changing it around the third time you repeat it. Mm-hmm. You're going to change it.
You
want
to hear something.
You want to hear something first. So let's talk about
that. Yeah, but you came up with some great icing on the cake.
and that's like great collaborators, and being like, we're having so much fun that you have to be able to be like, that's
tell,
silly. That's very silly. I'm so fucking grateful for my ex. Like, how about we? That's a very silly song and a very silly album, and it's because we were able to get loose with each other and just be like blurt it out.
And it was like, nah, that's not gonna happen. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, fuck it, just go with it.
Like, they're still singing it. I thought this was a line that you would be replacing.
But even the fact that she was cussing, I think it's like I think people like, you would expect Ariana Grande to say fucking in like the middle of her
which
song.
Which makes me
just
want
like,
you to cuss more.
Which is like, and
it's
that,
a writer.
To that point of realness too.
But that's her though. Do how you, that's how you feel, say it.
It's great.
So you guys do bring in ideas, but then it just might morph into something totally different than you were expecting originally.
Yeah, because again, songs start before you get into the studio. Why not go back to say, well, I had a thought. Most of us do have thoughts when you're walking down the street and you're like, oh, I'm going to write this down.
Yeah.
You hear something and you're like, oh, I'm going to write that down.
Right.
Fresh photos with the bomb lighting. New man on the Minnesota Vikings. True hurts needed something more exciting.
So Jesse, I mean, for example, in Truth Hurts, you know, the chorus, you know, has this like super infectious, repetitive melody, really great lyrics. But then you conclude it like with another icing on the cake hook, which is the bum bum de bum nonsense hook at the end. So how'd that come about?
Well, I'm going to be honest, I don't know who the Minnesota Vikings are. But Lizzo is just one of those artists that like, she can just go for days, like never, she has every song inside of her. And going back to that thing of like something can be a hit, but you know, you don't, and nobody knows it yet. The first time I saw Lizzo was in like 2017. She was playing for like 200 people, and I was like, this is Beyonce, but in a basement. Like, this is like, this is a worldwide, like, global smash artist, and she is gonna have the biggest moment ever, and all those 200 people left that day just probably going to the next person and going, hey, you gotta check out this doll as well. So, like, that's just another little, like, anecdote of, like, hits are just always around, but it just takes the right people to hear them.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Since you brought us back to the topic of hit songwriting, it's really a delicate balance also of great songwriting, let's say, of balancing the familiar with the unique. So if you go too far in any direction, it could really
derail the song
completely. So how do you handle that delicate balance?
Bad Guy is a perfect example. Like, you would any normal A&R who would hear that, be like, no way.
Sure. Exactly. Yeah, like,
no way. And you think you're going to number one with that? No. But
look.
Boom. Yeah.
So you can break the rules. But in normal everyday songwriting, for the most part, how do you really balance that? You know, between, like, I want to go crazy with this, but to have this accessible to the masses, we have to go in this realm, you know?
I think the crazier, the better.
Yeah.
To me, I think the shock of, I always, when I listen to a song, I'm like, what is going to make somebody play this song twice? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because they get two streams instead of one. like when they did... When they wrote the lyrics, even the song he did, I was like, I gotta hear that again.
Exactly.
Yes.
Like, the lyrics, man. That content. Yeah.
Is there, like, does this new economy, especially streaming, kind of help that? Because I think before, you know, obviously you still get the song on the record, but before, you know, the A&R, and they would pick, this is gonna be the single, this is where we're gonna go. Now you see a song like Bad Guy, you know, that was just the biggest debut off that record. It naturally became the single.
Yeah.
I mean, Truth Hurts, you know, I mean, Juice was doing its thing, and then Truth Hurts came along and blew it out the water. It's like,
streaming,
I mean, does that help?
Streaming definitely helps. Also, the fan base. Mm. You know, if you have a solid fan base, like, even Lizzo, like, you know, she has those fans that are diehard. And I think, you know, if the song connects, we now have, like, authentic platforms, like a Spotify or Apple Music, mm-hmm. the streaming, to show us what's really working, what the people really want, in a way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And now there is, like, okay, if that wasn't too weird, then, and also we're in a beautiful time in music right now in general, like, to where you can break the... Now, it wasn't this 5 years ago.
No, if she
came out at a different time, they wouldn't have got it.
Yeah.
This is the perfect time for people... People want to know more. They've been listening to the same thing for so long and the same artist for so long. They're like, I need something. Mm-hmm. Give me something, anything. So now it's the perfect time for writers to take advantage of the moment in time of our music, because it only changes every few years. And you got to either be the creator of the wave and be a part of that,
mm-hmm.
or you get washed away behind.
Right. Yeah. I also think we're in a really cool era where audiences are buying into artists. More so than just taking a hit record, putting it on a hot person, and just kind of pushing it out there. I feel like a lot more people are kind of like, okay, I like this girl, I want to know what she has to say, I'm going to go back and discover her whole catalog.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of feel it with so many artists like Lizzo and Billie Eilish and stuff, and even Ariana, who has been, you know, around for all these years, and has been hinting a lot at her personal life, but with songs like, you know, Thank You, Next, Seven Rings, all of that, it's like she was really ready to show people who she was. And it was a perfect launching pad for that style of music for her, because, you know, she was, you know, her relationships were so much in the, like, gossip blogs and stuff, but, you know, she wasn't super open in that way. And then with this album, she was like, okay, you're always talking about it. I'm ready to tell you what you all want to know.
Mm-hmm.
So it just feels like people are really buying into artists, even more so than just one record, and then they go away.
That's what technology did. It literally, like, allowed us so much access that they're like, give. And it's still, and it's good to a certain extent and bad to a certain extent, but it just depends on how you see it and how you deal with it.
What are the pros and cons?
The pros would be we have a lot more freedom to say, hey, look, the people want it. The people want the concert. The cons are we could get a lot of, like, bullshit, like, in the midst of just people wanting to put out a record.
Yeah. Plus, I think just the ADD factor of, like, here's something. It's like,
can't be good.
Things are moving too fast.
Yeah.
Or they can't be a 10.
Yeah, like, we have to just catch up to it, and it's, you know, I think it's hard, but it's also amazing because of the access we have to anything. Why men great
so they gotta be great? Has your approach to songwriting along with streaming changed because of, you know, changes in technology? So, for perfect example, one trend that we noticed is the rise of the hook-based intro. So instead of, like, giving the listener the full chorus right off the bat, which is, like, non-existent in pop. A lot of people think it should be, but it's not. Instead, you tease, like perfect example is Truth Hurts. It teases the first line of the chorus, then it goes into the verse. Doesn't give it all to the listener, right? And it makes them wait until, you know, on average, the first chorus is hitting around the 40-second mark. Mm-hmm. So are these intentional things that we're starting to do now? So almost half of all Hot 100 Top 10 hits have this now hook-based intro, mm-hmm. whereas in 2015, it was only 2% of songs. Mm-hmm. So it's exploded. So are these changes to songwriting done specifically to help keep the listener engaged? So you can get past that 30-second mark.
Yes,
on
you got to grab their attention fast.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And
but not give them too much because they might tune out.
Exactly, or you know, you just have to beat and understand that that song is just that fucking good. That goes back to the structure.
Yeah,
when you have a catchy part that just has to come again. You know it, you know, and it was a great line too. So it's like, you know, from that line that she's about to talk some shit, and you're setting as a producer, they set up everything perfectly, you know what I'm saying? And sometimes that's also like in the top line or the background vocals or in needy or whatever those things. But when you know that you have something that just can repeat over and over again.
Well, it's all about repetition. But so what's the role of the producer then? When you have all this repetition, you have all these killer hooks, helping to keep it fresh throughout the song, changing the timbre of an instrument or delivering it first with the piano and then with the vocals, the same melody or something. Like, what's your approach?
Well, with me, like, I'm a weirdo. Like, I go and I listen to songs and I deconstruct them myself in different ways. So, like, I'll realize, like, if I go listen to, let's say, the Camila song with Shawn Mendes, I'll count and be like, the same melody repeated 14 times before the second verse.
Yeah.
So what I try to do musically, if I'll try to keep the same part repetitive under what they're doing if they're not repeating.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times people don't catch that because it sits in the background. So I just try to study the music and understand the structure of something has to repeat, because just like the song has a hook, the beat has to have three parts. The
Definitely
beat has to have a hook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has to have a verse. You know what I'm saying? So I try to keep something repeating.
Yeah.
In the music.
Now, that's a clever song because, I mean, that song starts out with the instrumental hook melody.
It does.
And then Cabello is singing it in the first verse. And then they extract that ooh la 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 hook fragment from it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they throw that into the verse. And then Mendes sings the same hook. So it's like constant, you're having the same, Chainsmokers, closest, same premise.
Mm-hmm.
You have the same hook throughout the entire song, but it's being reinforced in different ways. And the listener probably doesn't even realize it. But it just keeps that song fresh, and it's that earworm that just gets into your soul.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That's
yeah.
the only, when it gets to the science behind it, okay, you learn that same thing in school. If you do something by habit, what do you do again?
Yeah.
You do it over and over and over again. And anything in life, that's the way that the human brain takes in information. So those are the things that you learn as you become a seasoned writer. Like those are.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because when you get to this level where you're at, a lot of people have to understand it. How creative you are with something that sounds so simple, but when you look deep down inside, you realize how really meticulously well crafted it is and how complex it really is. is. Yeah, you see some and I think fans people really need about, to understand that.
You see some fans talk about, oh, this it took this many people to write this song that said they repeated this word this many times. Mm-hmm. Like, you can say the same thing about thank you next, thank you next, thank you next, thank you next. But guess what? There's a reason why we did it. There's a reason why you're singing it. Mm-hmm. If I was like, thank you next, must be blessed, more phone says, what is it? Like, where's the hook? What am I supposed to sing back to you at the audience? As an audience member, as a fan, where's the cooperation going to take place when you're singing along in the car? Like, because we have to think about that too. Is a song like, how are they gonna engage with their fans with this one?
So on the premise of hooks, what to you is a great hook, and how do you know when you've written that killer?
Where, Quincy would say, chasing chills.
You can't
memorize it, like, if you can't just, like, you know, sing it and walk out the room and come back and sing it again, usually it's not a hit, you know what I'm saying? But, like, I'll be real, there are long hooks that are a little complicated. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I personally feel, as a producer, I'm always just in that room listening and trying to find the thing that just gives me... Stay here, standing up on my arms.
That's it. That's something that you can't quantify.
Yo, Babyface, I worked with him for years, and he said, if I don't have that hands up in the air moment, that like, at the hook, we're not doing it. It's not happening.
Yeah,
so,
I
don't know.
To go off kind of even what we were saying, for me, repetition is, I just love hearing that same thing over and over again. I mean, I love the Spice Girls. I love Madonna. I love, you know, these big pop songs that just get in your brain.
So you wanna play with magic? Boy, you should know what you're falling for. Baby, do you dare to do this? 'Cause I'm coming at you like a dark horse.
I was gonna ask you about dark horse because, you know, speaking of melody, really infectious earworms in the chorus is one thing, but the melody in the verse is killer there, and you have this infectious call and response. So are you looking to really, I mean, I guess it really depends on the song. When you're looking to be a little bit looser with verses and really just simplify, like, thank you next in the chorus or whatever, or really maximize, maybe this is more of a Max Martin thing, that every single aspect of the song is primed to be a hook.
I mean, I think the hook is what we hear in the song three times or however many times, you know? So that has to be the most memorable part, in a sense, that we can go, oh, hey, I know this part, I want to sing it again. Mm-hmm. By the time you hear it at the end, it's like you should know the hook already.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. It all sets each other up, each part of the song. But I feel like verses and pre's and bridges, those are areas you can get a little more creative.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of break it down in the hook of something simple and something memorable and something that just gets the whole point across of the song.
Yeah.
Like the fine line you were talking about, when knowing when you can go too far and knowing when you... But also, we know that there are songs that don't repeat at all.
And literally
because it's like...
Or rhyme.
Or
rhyme.
So that goes back to, okay, it's some crazy stuff becomes popular sometimes.
Goes back to the chasing the chill.
Yeah.
Just whatever feels good. If it feels good to be like, what is that song that's like, oh, man, am I wrong? We're in the backseat. Am I wrong? We're in the... Yes, that has a lot of lyrics in the hook.
Yeah.
Like, I don't... Like,
but it's all the same
melody. So it's like something's gonna... But it's like, okay, that's a complete...
So it's that balance.
It's really the balance.
Exactly, yeah. And you know it when you hear
some give
and
take.
I think it's great if you can sneak in the same melody a bunch of different times, but every time you hear it, it feels different. Obviously, We Found Love, Rihanna, is the melody over and over.
Yeah.
It's like, hello, diamonds in the light. And it's like, see how love in that whole place.
It's the same.
And you, like, secretly don't know that you're singing the same melody over and over.
But it feels
so good.
Mm-hmm. Completely
mad. To that point about Rihanna, too, I remember when Rude Boy came out, a lot of people were like, so surprised that it didn't rhyme with, like, the want, 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 what you want, want, want. Give it to me, baby, like, boom, boom, boom. And a lot of people on Twitter were like, that doesn't even rhyme. What kind of songwriting is this?
Definitely some rules that, are very important. You know, we always want to have that format, working. But I think, there's definitely room for a lot of rule breakers in this industry right now.
Yeah.
I feel like we're celebrating the weirdos. We're celebrating shit that feels like...
Mm-hmm.
man, I haven't seen that before. I haven't heard that before. What is it? How'd you do that? If people go, how'd you do that? I think you're kind of in a good space. Like, you know?
Well, going on the song structure, is that song length, the under 3 minute song length range, so all songs under 3 minutes, have gone from 12% of the top 10 in 2018 up to almost half in 2019. So my question is, why is that happening? And also, is that affecting your songwriting? Do you feel that you need to write, you know, shorter songs now?
Just
maybe because if you look at Lil Nas,
you're gonna get the extra stream.
You know, you know, 1 minute and 50 seconds for Panini, and 1 minute and 50 seconds or 53 for the original version of Old Town Road.
But also, if the thought is done, don't drag it out.
Yeah.
Like, don't drag it out. Like, we don't need to have. If the song doesn't need to be 4 or 5 minutes to get the point across,
but that's something we haven't seen for years, though. And all of a sudden, we're starting to see that now.
Exactly. So
the rules are being broken.
Yes, rules are being broken. And then you have like somewhere like you'll have a Frank Ocean will be like, this song was 5 minutes and 40 seconds.
Right.
It's like, boom, boom. So you can literally do whatever.
Yeah.
But I personally don't have any song over 3 minutes on like my album, for instance. It's like that's my attention span. Like, I make songs how I listen to music.
Yeah.
And most of the times I'm not gonna like go sit through the whole thing unless you really like, you know, doing some lyrics, or unless I just happen to be doing something else at the same time and like, you know, whatever that is, whatever reason that might be that I just happen to get through the full song. But it's
But it is the attention span and the, you know, there's so much out there and it's like people want things quick and things are just moving faster all around, I feel. So.
Yeah.
When you listen to music, do you guys listen to a song through to the end when you're listening to music for yourselves?
For me, it depends on what it is. If it's like something I absolutely love, I'll listen to it. I mean, I think I listen to Always Remember Us This Way from the Star Is Born soundtrack literally 5 times every single day. But if it's not something I love, if it's just like, oh, I want to check this out and I don't love it, I'm like, verse, pre-chorus, I'm done. For me.
If I'm giving something a chance, you got 10 seconds with me, buddy.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, because I'm going to know if I like the, I'm going to say, do I like these chords? Probably in my subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you made it past the
first
round.
Well, you got to wait for
do I like this?
You got to get to the hook.
I don't know, but I'm like, then I'm going to skip through. I'm going to skip through and say, okay, if I don't like this verse, let me skip through and see if the hook is well. Okay, well, maybe I might go backwards.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but if
I only like one part of the song, why would I listen to it anyway?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's one certain things that you're going to sing, but like, I'm going to skip through. And especially if I'm like, really, if somebody's like, oh, you got to check out insert artist here. Like, and I'm like, okay, I'll check it out. And if I'm not really interested in their artistry, but I'm like, okay, well, let's see if they have good songs, because nothing else is giving me anything. Let's see what the music talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It only takes most people.
So you need that wow factor right up front.
Yeah, not even like wow, but like, give me something. Give me just something.
That's why Motown was so successful, because Barry already talked about how they would focus on bringing people in right on the intro, so all those songs had their own kind of intro, just to hook you straight in there. And I feel like that attributed to a lot of their success.
Have every part, which is why that Max Martin approach, like every part is a hook.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's why that mentality is so you people are gonna be skipping through and skipping. There's too much music out there for you to not treat each part with enough care for whatever's the best for the song.
Exactly.
You're right.
And that's what it really comes down to at this level, is that every single nuance of the song is treated with that much care.
And people forget the thing for producers, what they always forget are beat makers, because they're not the same thing.
They
do too much on the song. They forget that the artist is the star.
Right.
They want their production to be the star. The production is never the star. Let the artist shine, or the song, or whatever it is. But it's definitely a difference, because I'm a producer. I don't have to physically go in and make the beat and go and do the strings. It's like, I'm bringing the people who's best at those jobs, but I'm facilitating and put it together.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But somebody that makes a beat and emails it and Taylor writes a hit song to it, I don't really consider that a producer in my book.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like bringing it all together from top to bottom.
The full production.
Yeah. Like, you have a producer of a movie.
Yeah.
You also have a director, writer.
Mm-hmm. Well, how's the role of the producer today differ than, you know, years ago in your mind?
I think now it's more digital.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easier for a kid to go get Fruity Loops in, make a loop in, and send it out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think before it was, there's like real world producers like Quincy Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like he didn't play all them sounds on the Thriller album.
Yeah.
He brought the best people in to do it and produce the album.
Yeah.
And has a knowledge of music.
Yeah.
And a knowledge of how to work with people and what you were saying earlier is pull the best out of them.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be surprised how rare that is.
So,
and, you know, a good producer that has the knowledge. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they're out there, of course, but mm-hmm. there's a lot that don't have
yeah.
the knowledge, you know, and don't take the time.
And they expect you to just write a hit over a freaking bologna sandwich. Like, what is this? What is this that you have to, like, write into and you don't even have the capability to be like, okay, should I bring up some more loops?
Right.
Maybe you should put your fingers to work the same way that I'm going to have to put my vocal cords to work, and you're going to ask me to do all these harmonies on top of it, aren't you?
Oh,
I'm
going
to have to
cut
the demo. I have to do my part. You have to do your part. Everybody has to play their part in the room and play to
yeah.
your strength and do it. And if you're not that person, bring in somebody to be that person with you.
Yeah.
Collaborate then.
Yeah.
You have to know your weaknesses. Be able to collaborate well, because that's the only way you're going to get the hits on.
I think especially right now, seeing how many urban hits are in the top 10, let's also really just kind of dive into that, because the collaborative process of what that means right now, I mean, the people are literally, you know, in different countries collaborating, you know, and making hit records together. You know, my boy OZ is, you know, out there, I think in either Germany or Switzerland, doing his thing. And you know, we have a record out right now that's you know, crazy with Rick Ross and,
mm-hmm.
and you know, Drake, because we send each other stuff and we go back and forth and we make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we also have to be in the room at some point to make it, you know, all come together. But I'm just saying, in the urban space, there's definitely that process of collaboration coming together and,
mm-hmm.
and kind of letting everybody, you know, do their thing, do their part, you know, knowing what you do best. Remember that
mm-hmm.
conversation?
Sure,
that?
Yeah.
Knowing what you do best
yeah.
in that particular, you know, genre, I can say that happens to be, you know, occupying a lot of space.
And
that's, top 10, you know,
and
yeah.
that's where the technology conversation.
I was
yeah,
literally
it's
just
like,
about to say
it's
that.
Different.
It's so
like,
dumb.
And you're like,
it's different.
You have like Compass. You have like Jam Compass. You have all of these other things.
Mm-hmm.
You have your Instagram. You have your.
Right.
You have everything
to connect.
You can
to connect
get,
people. Yeah.
Like
mm-hmm.
you
don't
make a record with someone in another country.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Then, I mean, that's incredible.
Right. And I mean, when we did that record, we were all in the same house, right? And we had to. We had to send it, you know, just as we, but we weren't like going downstairs and saying,
yeah.
what's going on, bro? We were in separate rooms, just like going back and forth, sending back and forth until we felt like we had a draft that gave us all chills. And then, you know, we shoot it to, you know, Drake, and he does his thing. He starts writing to it and making it work. And it's like,
yeah.
it's just this consistent, just email chain, just fucking turn it into something great, you know?
I love
you. So, one more question
yeah.
for all of you. So what advice would you give aspiring songwriters and producers who want to score that may, and I know what you're going to say, but I've learned a lot from you all today. You taught me. So, you know, who want to score that major hit but want to remain true to their own unique creativity?
Two things. I think make sure you're taking the time to develop your craft and spending the hours. It's about the unseen hours.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about the hours where everybody's seeing what you do, because everybody can go and say,
yeah,
well, we see Tommy doing this and that, but it was
mm-hmm.
all of those 12, 15 years of the unseen hours that get you to, I mean, it happens fast for some people, but for me, it took time to develop myself to really, truly understand, because I don't come from a musical background. I taught myself music.
Well, what do they say? It's 10,000 hours or something?
10,000
hours.
10,000
hours.
So you got to put that work in.
Yeah.
It doesn't
yeah,
just happen like that.
Yeah.
Master,
and that also helps you with longevity.
Yeah, master the plugins that you love. Master everything that you really, you know, can actually be great at in the room, and really finding that strength and taking the time to work out in the gym. You know, you don't have any of these basketball players going out there with the same kind of jump shot they had, you know, 10 years ago. They're consistently learning new moves, coming through and consistently working out to be at their best in the game.
Yeah.
And that's what the studio is for us. It's like, it's a championship, you know, just court for you. So you got to make sure you're really coming out there ready to go with all your reps already done.
Well, and I was going to say, I think that's what really separates, you know, people like you apart from everybody else when you attain that kind of level of success, because you put in those hours.
Exactly.
You've honed your craft.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we put on these workshops, and we've had hit songwriters who have written a one hit, and they were a one hit wonder, and they're like, you know, so I'm attending your workshop because I couldn't repeat it again.
Exactly.
And it's when you start to really understand the craft and really start to hone it, then you can have, like we were just saying, the longevity, and you can make a sustained career for yourself in this ever-changing music industry.
Completely.
Because it's about the knowledge.
Completely. Right. Because
if you don't have inspiration in the first place, you shouldn't be in it.
And if you're not going to have longevity, then what are you doing it for anyway? You're going to put all your hours and going to work for free every day, giving you everything. Mm-hmm. If you're not going to be the greatest at a job like this, then you shouldn't do it.
Hobby that's going nowhere.
Exactly. Yeah. So you either, okay, you better tell me that's but that's the thing, like in today's day and age, there's no excuse for you not to know and be a student of your craft. There's no excuse because of technology, what we were talking about earlier, because of the fact that you have access around the world, people that you can ask a question to. You can have podcasts like this to listen in on some of the top songwriters in the game,
mm-hmm.
or some of the newest songwriters in the game that are coming in with their perspective and telling us their struggles as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can just take in all of this knowledge and apply it to your own thing. But whatever you do,
mm-hmm.
make sure that you're being a student of your craft.
Student.
I would say too,
the ever-lasting student, right?
Yeah.
Always a student.
Yeah.
Always.
True.
I would say too, like back to the ego.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you constantly keep that ego, you have to constantly keep the ego in check, because you could have a massive hit, make tons of money, be on top of your game, and then you could go back down, and then you could go back up, and then new people coming in, and you know, other people. It's just like this flow, and you have to just go with that flow and keep your ego in check and surround yourself with people that are better than you, especially when you're coming up.
Yeah.
Surround yourself with people that are better than you. And if you know, I would always say this to a new writer, like if you know that you're supposed to do this, and if it just really resonates within you so authentically and so true, you have to just keep your hustle so strong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, you know, like, do anything to get there, because when you get there, you'll be like, oh, I was meant to be here this whole time, but I never stopped. And there's a million no's. Even all of us here have had
Thick skin is so important.
Thick skin
and
like,
perseverance.
And no. It's I always say 99 failures for your one success.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you gotta just keep you know, falling until you fucking step up again.
Yeah.
It's just this persistent energy.
Totally.
Sure.
How many songs have we put out that didn't go number one?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
And how many songs have we all written, like, hard drives full?
They didn't even get anywhere near a chart. Yeah, exactly.
It didn't leave the
Word
studio. But we went back the next day, and we did it again.
Yeah.
We went back the next day, and we did it again. You know, just that persistence, if you know this is your destiny.
Yeah,
that's
we'll
why
see.
I think never
we'll
be
see.
Afraid to develop your own, because people look at the success, like a lot of my success comes from being with the artist from day one. Like, I was there with Ariana from day one.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I went through the trials and tribulations. Oh, she put a record out and didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then put this record out. And then now, fast forward all the years later, it's successful. She's going to deal with us because we were there. Like, even
right.
Travis Scott, giving him his first record to even come out anywhere. You know what I mean? It was in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like being in the beginning and helping
Genesis
develop. Genesis
of it all, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful, man.
Mm-hmm.
What about you,
Jesse?
I was going to say, like, the same thing as far as, like, not the same thing, but I mean, I feel like just being a good person, and I know that sounds really rudimentary, but it's like people aren't going to remember every song that you wrote with them, but they're going to remember how you made them feel, and that is way, way more important, because when they're doing the next project, they're going to want to invite you back. So it's just really about keeping consistent, being egoless, being grateful to be there, because there are tons of talented people, but for some reason, we are the people who are able to have that success. And the other thing that I just want to say as far as advice is, other people's success isn't your failure. Ooh. It's basically, you know what I mean? That was that success was meant for them, and my success is meant for me. Mm-hmm. And everybody's path is completely different. There are people who take 20 years and, you know, finally get a record-breaking song, or there are people who the first song they ever wrote is their biggest hit. So everyone's path is completely different, and it's just like, look left and right and just be like, damn, you're killing it. Like, I'm so proud of you. Because if anything, we all know how hard this industry is. Mm-hmm. So to look at somebody else's success and be like, I wish I had that. It's like, yeah, you wish you had that, but your version of it, whatever your version of that success is. So when I see somebody else, I'm like, damn, I know what it takes to get that, and I'm so proud of you.
Well, I can't thank you guys enough for sharing all these insights. This has just been amazing. I will say I'll be surprised if there's not a hit song called Chasing Chills at some point. Guys, thank you so much for coming on the Before Chaffee podcast.
Thank you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.